Good morning. We thank you for tuning into our radio program today. This program is brought to you each Sunday morning by the Parkway Church of Christ here in Bowling Green. Our building is located at 125 Hilltopper Avenue. If you're interested in coming and visiting with us, we're always very happy to have visitors, and particularly those of our community here. We appreciate that interest in spiritual things and interest in Bible study, and we enjoy getting to know folks who have that interest. We hope today that you'll come and visit with us there at that location. We meet at the Parkway building on Sunday mornings at 9 o'clock for Bible classes, at 10 o'clock for worship on Sunday mornings, and worship at 6 on Sunday evenings. We have also Bible study on Wednesday evenings at 7 o'clock. We hope that you'll come and meet with us. We'll be happy to meet you if we've never met you before. It will be our honor. And keep in mind that if you have any questions about anything that you see done or hear taught, we will be more than happy to accommodate you, answer any questions that you may have, spend whatever time is necessary with you, and we'll just be focused upon what the Scriptures teach. What does the Bible say about the practice, or what does the Bible say about the doctrine? It will not be a discussion of personal opinions about anything. We'll be, if we can't put our finger on the passage that addresses it, then we simply will not defend ourselves. And if we can't defend ourselves, we hope that we would be honest enough to give up the practice. So keep this in mind. This is our goal. A simple, straightforward Bible study. This morning I want to, in this audience, I'm sure it will be only a reminder of a phrase that you see that was used by Jesus. You see it in Luke chapter 4, Matthew chapter 4, in the temptation of Christ. And then you see Jesus using it of Peter in Matthew 16, or Mark's account in Mark chapter 8 we'll be looking at. But I want us to take a look at this, and I'll set it up by reminding you of the, it's the second temptation in Luke's account. It's the last one in Matthew's account, but it's when the devil took Jesus up on a high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world. It says, in a moment of time, the devil said to him, and here's the temptation, all this power will I give thee, and the glory of them, for that is delivered unto me, and to whomsoever I will give it. If thou therefore wilt worship me, all shall be thine. Been a lot of discussion about whether or not the devil actually had the power to do what he claimed he was going to do here, but that's another discussion. This is what he tempted Jesus to do, to fall down and worship him, and the reward would be that he would give him all the kingdoms of the world. Well, how did Jesus answer? You know, Jesus always answered the devil with just indignant rebuff. And that's what you see here in verse 8. Jesus answered and said to him, "Get thee behind me, Satan. For it is written, Thou shalt worship the Lord thy God, and him only shalt thou serve." So the devil is answered here. Jesus, of course, as he always did, perfectly answered, relying upon a "Thus saith the Lord." Relying upon an "It is written." That's exactly how we ought to answer all such things. When God has spoken on the subject, we should refer to what he has said, to what is spoken. But I want you to focus on the expression, "Get thee behind me, Satan." Now, you see this in some of the newer translations, if I remember correctly. You see it in Matthew's account, not in Luke's account. The King James, you see it in Luke's account. "Get thee behind me, Satan." But this is also stated to Peter, something similar, or at least this expression is used of Peter. Remember in Matthew, we'll use Mark's account here because I'm open to it. In Mark chapter 8, in verse 31, marks a point when Jesus, when it says he began to teach his disciples that the Son of Man must suffer many things, be rejected of the elders and of the chief priests and scribes, and be killed, and after 3 days rise again. Okay, now notice how Peter reacted to this. And we sometimes do it, and I don't am only parroting what others have said, the language they use, but sometimes you'll hear Peter described as impetuous Peter. And that seems to be a good description of Peter here. His reaction was to rebuke Jesus. Peter took him and began to rebuke him. And verse 33 says, "But when he had turned about and looked on his disciples, he rebuked Peter," that is Jesus, "saying," now watch the language here, "Get thee behind me, Satan. Get thee behind me, Satan. For thou savorest not the things that be of God, but those things that be of men." I want to study this morning some ways that people can be like Satan. Where it might be said, if we were to be rebuked by Jesus, "Get thee behind me, Satan." Why did Jesus say to Peter, or describe Peter, in the same way that he addressed Satan in Matthew chapter 4 and Luke 4? Well, because Peter was basically representing the position of Satan. Peter was articulating the position of Satan. When he rejected what Jesus said was his mission to do. And we want to keep in mind that Jesus was very consistent about this all through his public ministry. This is what he was going to do. I'm always shocked at some people take positions on passages like the Garden Prayer that at least suggest, at least imply, that they believe that Jesus was not that certain about his mission. No, he was always certain about it. This is what he was going to do. In fact, he was so certain that when Peter questioned whether or not Jesus was to do these things, was to die and be killed and then rise again the third day, Jesus rebuked him and called him Satan for that. We ought to think about that a little bit when we venture off outside of the scriptures into some of this speculative territory that represents Jesus as a mere man. And people do it all too often. So why was Peter so rebuked, so strongly rebuked here? Well, because he represented the views of the devil. I wonder if people today ever do that. Well, let's look at some examples of how this can be done. This is done every time someone teaches what the devil teaches, or uses some of the operating principles or methodologies that the devil uses. You know, in 2 Corinthians 2 and verse 11, Paul said, lest Satan should get the advantage of us, for we are not ignorant of his schemes, his devices, the King James says. We're not ignorant of those. The devil has schemes, tactics, devices. What if humans employ those same devices? Well, then they are acting as Satan. And they do this sometimes. You know, in Genesis chapter 3, notice how simply, you might just say it was a very simple thing as you read it, how simply, in such a simple way, Satan misrepresented God. I want you to think about this. You remember that Genesis chapter 3 is where the serpent, and Satan was acting through the bodily form of the serpent, which form seems to have been changed as a curse from God. You later see in chapter 3. But you remember the serpent was more subtle. He was more subtle than any beast of the field which the Lord God had made. And he said to the woman, "Yea, hath God said, you shall not eat of every tree of the garden." The woman said to the serpent, "We may eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God said, You shall not eat it, neither shall you touch it, lest you die. The serpent, I want you to notice how simple this is. I wonder if people ever operate this way today. Now, let me preface this observation with this warning. If they do, they stand to be rebuked as operating as Satan, acting, behaving, teaching like Satan. So let's be ready for that. Jesus told Peter that. The serpent said to the woman, "You shall not surely die." Now she had said, and she represented the law accurately, and there's speculation about how the woman knew this law, because you know God gave the law before the woman was made. And this gets into, of course, some questions about sort of the orientation of Genesis 1, 26 through 28, and Genesis chapter 2 in the latter verses of it. I realize that. And so it seems like, it seems to me that you have the story, the specific details of the fabrication, the formation of the woman, have to fit into Genesis 1, 26 through 28, because it says God made them male and female. So for the details of how God made the female, you have to wait for Genesis chapter 2. But either the man told the woman the law of God, or God told her. And she was able to quote the law, and she said, "You're not to eat of the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. In verse 4, though, the devil added one word to this equation. He said, "You shall not surely die." Think of how simple it is to completely, and I mean radically, in the sense of turning something upside down, change the law of God. All you have to do is add one little word. We think of things like Mark chapter 16 and verse 16. He who believes and is baptized shall be saved. He who does not believe shall be condemned. And what do people do with at least the baptism part there? Basically, they say he who believes and is not baptized shall be saved. Whether or not people are willing to admit they have reworded that verse to that extent is irrelevant. This is what they teach. This is their view of baptism. That baptism is not essential to salvation. Jesus said he who believes and is baptized, and people today say he who believes and is not baptized will be saved anyway. So they're adding a little word, little three-letter word, just like the devil did, and it totally changes the meaning of the passage. So we want to be careful about that. In other words, it is possible for humans to be in the very position of Satan in what they teach. Now we see this several times in the Bible. You see this in 1 Timothy chapter 4. Paul said the Spirit in verse 1, he said the Spirit speaks expressly that in the latter time some shall depart from the faith, giving heed to seducing spirits and doctrines of devils, speaking lies and hypocrisy, having their conscience seared with a hot iron. He gives some specifics, forbidding to marry, commanding to abstain from meats, which God has created to be received with thanksgiving of them which believe and know the truth. So what were they teaching? They were teaching the doctrines of devils. Here humans were guilty of, Paul prophesied, would be guilty of, teaching the devil's teaching. The doctrine means teaching. They would be teaching the devil's teaching, the devil's doctrine. And when that happens, the rebuke that belongs to the devil, "Get thee behind me, Satan," also can be applied to the human. get thee behind me, and it may be Joe or Bob or Billy. It could be anybody. It could be me. It could be Tim. Get thee behind me, Tim, if I were to do that. If I were to brazenly, knowingly misrepresent the Scriptures. We sometimes talk about people forgetting things or making mistakes and stand to be corrected and are corrected. But what about the person who doesn't correct? They're teaching the doctrines of devils. Over in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, or 2 Corinthians chapter 11, Paul, in verses 13 through 15, talks about some who were false apostles. He called them false apostles, deceitful workers. He said, transforming themselves into the apostles of Christ. And no marvel, for Satan himself is transformed into an angel of light. Therefore, it is no great thing if his ministers, do you see that? If his ministers also be transformed as the ministers of righteousness. So, Satan is transformed into an angel of light, and he has ministers who represent him. You know, every time a minister, every time a teacher teaches something that is the devil's doctrine, he's operating in that capacity. He's in that position. He may not even realize it. But we need to be very careful about this, because we'll end up being deserving of the rebuke, get thee behind me, Satan. Sometimes it can be other things. Sometimes it can be areas in which people emulate the devil. They behave like the devil. Kind of interesting that in 1 Timothy chapter 3, while I'm still open here to chapter 4, I'll make this point from chapter 3. Paul is giving the qualifications of a local church elder. Now, that's verses 1 through 7. And then he's going in verse 8, he's going to switch, and 8 through 13, give the qualifications of a local church deacon. The elder is an overseer, a bishop. The deacon is a minister, a servant. That's what the word deacon means, servant, to serve. Well, I want you to look at the focus on the qualifications of the elder. Verse 6 says, not a novice, lest being lifted up with pride, he fall into the condemnation of the devil. Might you say, get thee behind me, Satan, if that were to happen? So what is the danger here, Paul? Well, he doesn't need to be a new convert. He doesn't need to be a neophyte. He doesn't need to be new to the faith. He needs to be old enough in the faith that he's capable of teaching others. Latter part of verse 2. You would have already seen that if you were just reading through here. He needs to be old enough that he has children who have proven themselves, who are themselves faithful, to invoke here Titus's account in Titus chapter 1. In verse 6. I like to tell people, yeah, I don't actually have to do that. Because in 1 Timothy chapter 3, verses 4 and 5, it says, one who rules well his own house, having his children in subjection with all gravity. For if a man know not how to rule his own house, how shall he take care of the church of God? He's clearly talking about the principle of guiding and leading by appealing to the conscience, by appealing to the intellect, to a person's own personal volition. He has to be, because there would be a breakdown in the parallel when he goes on to say, how then shall he take care of the church of God? You know, you may spank your children and discipline your children in physical ways. Church elders don't do that. They have no authority to do that. There's not, you know, some back room with a paddle in the church building where the elders take unruly members back there and spank them. How does an elder guide or rule the church, the flock that is among him? I should say them, because it's always plural, but the point here is a man's qualifications. How does he do that? Well, he does that through counsel, through guidance, through rebuke, through reproof. That's how he does that. So not a novice, lest being lifted up with pride, he fall into the condemnation of the devil. But I want you to notice, in the next verse, 1 Timothy 3 and verse 7, Paul does the exact same thing on another point. Moreover, he must have a good report of them that are without, lest he fall into reproach and the snare of the devil. Snare of the devil. In other words, he's vulnerable to the devil. He may act like the devil through being proud, verse 6, or he may be vulnerable to the devil in verse 7. Paul mentions the devil twice right there in two back-to-back qualifications. So this is important for us to consider. We don't want to conduct ourselves in a way, and particularly one who calls himself an elder, that you would have Jesus saying, "Get thee behind me, Satan," right? And that's the point. Look at another way that one might emulate the devil. Over in Acts chapter 13, you have a story, one of those that almost seems incidental to the larger story that you're reading here. But Paul, the gospel is being preached, and sometimes you have sort of unusual opportunities and circumstances to be able to teach the gospel to people that you might not initially think would be receptive to it. But in Acts chapter 13, verse 6, it says, when they had gone through the Isle of Paphos, they came to a certain sorcerer, a false prophet, a Jew, whose name was Bar-Jesus, which was with the deputy of the country, and that man's name was Sergius Paulus. He's described as a prudent man who called for Barnabas and Saul and desired to hear the word of God. But Elymas, the sorcerer, this is a different name for him, says, for so is his name by interpretation in the parentheses, withstood them, seeking to turn away the deputy from the faith. Seeking to turn away the deputy from the faith? You ever read anything like that in the Bible? Well, another chapter 13. Matthew chapter 13, in the parable of the sower. When anyone hears the word of the kingdom and understandeth it not, then cometh the, what? Who? The wicked one, and catches away that which is sown in his heart. This is he which received the seed by the wayside. The devil. Wait a minute. Is that who's doing it over here in Acts chapter 13? Well, let's see how close to the devil it is. It's not the devil. It's Elymas the sorcerer, and he was trying to turn the deputy away from the faith. See, what is he doing? Well, he's contradicting. He's challenging. He's denying. Basically denying reality. Denying history. Rejecting eyewitness testimony. Rejecting miracles. He's rejecting all of that. Then Saul. Here's why I wanted you to look at this passage. Verse 9 of Acts 13. Then Saul, who is also called Paul, filled with the Holy Ghost, set his eyes on him and said, O full of all subtlety and all mischief, thou child of the devil. Child of the devil? He said, wilt thou not cease to pervert the right ways of the Lord? Now behold, the hand of the Lord is upon thee. Thou shalt be blind, not seeing the sun for a season. And immediately there fell on him a mist and a darkness, and he went about seeking someone to lead him by the hand. When the deputy saw what was done, believed, being astonished at the doctrine of the Lord. Now I want you to think about what we just read. What did Paul call Elymas? He said, you child of the devil. Why did he call him, in verse 10, the child of the devil? Because verse 8 said that he tried to turn the deputy from the faith. Now, friends, here's the lesson. Every time someone today operates in that capacity, and they do it all the time. I will tell you what happens. Someone stumbles onto an opportunity to hear the truth. Maybe they attend a service of a faithful group of Christians, and someone is teaching a class or preaching a sermon, speaking as the oracles of God, 1 Peter 4:11. Speaking as the oracles of God. And this stranger has wandered in here, and they have this opportunity, maybe the first time in their life, or maybe for the first time in several years, opportunity to hear a gospel sermon. Now, when I say gospel sermon, I mean one that's not laced with the opinions of men, but I mean one that is based upon the words of God. Now, hear this gospel sermon, whether for the first time or whether for the first time in a long time. They're impacted by it. They go back to their circle of friends, maybe their co-workers, maybe a spouse, maybe their children, maybe their parents, maybe their grandma. And grandma or mom and dad or son or daughter or co-workers say, oh, you can't listen to them. You don't want to go over there. And they start working on them. And they seek to turn them from the faith. What would Jesus say to them? In whose capacity are they acting or operating? That of Satan. Get thee behind me, Satan. So it was said to the devil, and it was said to Peter, while Peter was acting, operating as an agent, or in the same way as Satan. I have one more verse I want you to look at. John chapter 8. John 8. Some of you may have thought of this already. John 8 verse 44, Jesus was speaking to, and by the way, you always want to qualify this to be honest with the scriptures. He was speaking to Jews who were rejecting him. This was typically among the leadership of the Jews, not always. But these were Jews who had rejected him, and he is challenging them here. Verse 43, why do you not understand my speech? Even because you cannot hear my word. Now, that's not because they had hearing deficiencies. It wasn't because of some physical problem of being able to detect sounds. It was because they had closed their minds to the truth. So Jesus said to them in verse 44 of John 8, you are of your father, the devil. And the lust, in other words, you are, like he told Elymas, a son of the devil. You are a son of the devil. He said, the lust of your father you will do, plural. He was a murderer from the beginning and abode not in the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks of his own, for he is a liar and the father of it. So in other words, they were mimicking Satan. And this was evidenced in two different ways. He talks about the devil being a murderer from the beginning. That goes back to Cain, doesn't it? We recently talked about Cain rising up and slaying his brother. And then he added to that, and you think of all of the murders committed all through the Old Testament. Just a long list of them. And then you have, in the latter part of the verse, he says when he speaks a lie, he speaks of his own nature, some Bibles have there, for he is a liar. He is a liar and the father of lies. What if people lie? You know, it's funny, I was just today, this morning, texting with someone about a celebrity who was lying about an accident that he had. He was blaming his accident on some truck driver in front of him. Celebrity. Alec Baldwin. I thought it interesting. He was quickly debunked on that. I mean quickly. They showed the video of actually what happened, the real video. And that describes what happened. And it proves that he was just a liar. How are, in whose capacity are people acting when they do that? The devil's. Our time is up today. We thank you for listening. Hope you'll tune in next week. Until then, we bid you a pleasant good day.